Quick warning, we say the Amazon Smart Speaker's wake word a lot in this episode, so you might want to mute its microphone while you listen. All right, on with the show.
This is how my morning began today.
Alexa, how did I sleep last night?
In order to track sleep, go to the Skills section of your Alexa app and enable Baby Connect.
What? Alexa, ask Fitbit how I slept last night.
I'm really annoyed. I'm annoyed.
You fell asleep at 11:17 p.m. and slept for 5 hours and 50 minutes. After today, you'll be cruising toward a snoozin'.
I don't know what you're doing, but I don't think Emily is going to put up with it for long.
Last night in the kitchen, I used Alexa to log dinner and a drink.
Tell food tracker to add 1 beer to my day.
I successfully logged beer, totaling 153 calories. You have consumed 0 calories today.
That's not true. Liar!
That skill has technical problems. But, you know, after work in the afternoons, Alexa successfully tells me how many steps I've taken today.
Okay, Joshua, I have 2 questions. Why are you doing this? And why do you need Alexa to do it? I mean, your Fitbit can tell you some of this stuff, and your phone can tell you the rest.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to lose a few pounds, and I was hoping that with all this technology coming together, you know, trackers and phones and Alexa and smart speakers, that I might gain some insights. Alexa has brains to spare, so for crying out loud, why can't she just tell me why I can't get a full night's sleep?
Have you figured out what the problem is?
Well, our news director says maybe I shouldn't drink a glass of beer before bed.
No, I'm sweet, but I mean the problem with Alexa.
It's not just Alexa. Health trackers collect a lot of information, but a lot of it's not very useful because they don't tell you what to do with it. Giving us better health advice is a problem that every big tech company is trying to solve right now. We know Amazon is interested in our health. They bought PillPack, a drug distribution company. They set up Haven, a high-end consulting group aimed at bringing down the cost of healthcare. They put Alexa on a high-end Fitbit. And they host a bunch of fitness apps in the cloud and provide the artificial intelligence to help them come up with health insights. So, can all this technology make us healthier? This season, Amazon offered us people to talk to on every single topic we brought up. Except anything about health was completely off limits. Their lips were sealed. And that made us even more curious. So I went searching for what they might be up to. And that search took me somewhere I never expected. I'm Joshua McNichols.
And I'm Carolyn Adolph.
This is Primed, a podcast about how Amazon is changing life as we know it.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I want to tell you this crazy story I found. At first, you won't see the connection to Amazon, but hang in there because it'll come around. So, imagine the year is 1971.
Beautiful, beautiful launch. And these three fellows down are on the way to the moon.
Astronauts Jim Irwin and David Scott were in orbit around the moon.
They've got to go into a parking orbit around the Earth for 80 miles.
When Jim Irwin had a heart attack.
Wait, somebody had a heart attack on an Apollo mission?
Yes, it was the 15th Apollo mission, and they were moving boxes of rocks and camera equipment from the lunar module into the spaceship that would take them back to Earth.
So, I remember this stuff. I ran home from school to watch this on TV when I was a little kid. Why did I hear nothing about this heart attack?
I don't know. I mean, there wasn't as much press about the later moon expeditions. Television stations would show a snippet of footage, like somebody climbing a crater wall, and then they'd cut to soap operas.
I do remember that. We returned to programming already in progress.
Edge of Light is brought to you by Dawn, the dishwashing liquid that does more than just cut grease. Dawn takes...
But what happened to the astronaut who had the heart attack?
NASA had data pouring in because they had him hooked up to all kinds of sensors. They weren't 100% sure what they were seeing. But one official wrote that if the astronaut had been back on Earth, he'd have been sent to an emergency room and treated for a heart attack. but all Mission Control told Irwin was that he seemed a little out of breath. They advised him to take it easy.
That was the understatement of the year.
So you could think of this as phase one of NASA's efforts to collect health data on astronauts. They could get some data, but it wasn't enough. Fast forward about 20 years.
Okay.
All right, we're on.
Devon Griffin worked for NASA starting in 1991. His training was in optical sensors, and today he's in charge of physical science at NASA headquarters.
Here's another rabbit hole. I was actually the first person to quantify the fractal number of soot.
But early in his career, he wanted to measure astronauts' health more closely with even more sophisticated sensors. This is phase two for NASA and health data, the idea that more data is better. Griffin knew people wanted to be astronauts so badly, they jumped through just about any hoop that NASA put in front of them.
Why don't we make it an employment requirement that if you're going to be an astronaut, we can poke and prod and probe you all you want?
About 10 years ago, they were trying to develop a better electrocardiogram reader that would more accurately monitor an astronaut's risk of heart attack inside the spacesuit.
If we decide we're going to require this, we are going to have to take the current Earth technology and we are going to have to adapt it so it is sufficiently robust to be used in a spacesuit where stuff is pulling and twisting.
And while the astronauts are driving moon rovers and moving rocks. Then they had an epiphany. It came about by asking the question, do we really need this? I mean, if the system went down, would we cancel a spacewalk? And they said, no, we'd let the astronaut go anyway.
It's going to require a lot of money. We're not going to learn anything that would cause us to make a different decision, so we're not going to spend that kind of money.
Oh, they're having the same problem that you have with your fitness trackers. They want to make the data useful.
Yes. And that brings us to phase three. Half a century later, they've landed on a solution. They built an Alexa-like health agent, an AI that can live inside a spacesuit and monitors conditions there. It knows the astronauts' medical profile. It knows their work plan, you know, what the astronauts are supposed to do on their spacewalk. And it puts it all together. And if the astronaut loses contact with the flight surgeons at Mission Control, it can give the astronaut advice, like,
maybe take it easy. You're burning through your oxygen too quickly. Move on to the next task. Drink something.
That actually sounds like a dream version of Alexa. I want that. I want her to tell me to calm down and have a cup of tea.
Well, they're still testing this system, and it could go on the International Space Station someday.
I can see you're really upset about this.
Actually, you know what that reminds me of now? Hal from the movie 2001.
I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill, and think things over.
Well, Hal went on to cause a lot of trouble, but he was easier to talk to than Alexa. Astronauts didn't have to say, Hal, tell GE to open the pod bay doors. Coming up after the break, you know who else loves space technology? Jeff Bezos. So we've been talking about heart attacks in space and how NASA has developed a virtual agent that helps astronauts monitor and make decisions about their health. And here's where I bring it back down to Earth and to Amazon.
Hi. Joshua?
Yes.
Rashna, nice to meet
you. Nice to meet you.
Every year, Amazon chooses a handful of startups focused on voice technology, and it brings them to Seattle to participate in its Alexa Accelerator. It's an incubator at the University of Washington to help startups. Amazon spends like $200 million
on it. Yeah.
You have? Okay. Yeah. So this is the Amazon Alexa space, and there's other startups here.
Rashna Dimija is a co-founder of one of those companies called Agenta. They're licensing the NASA technology and bringing it to regular people on Earth.
The technology that we're licensing is the brains behind that voice interface. So it's an intelligent agent that actually has a little more intelligence than you see in the smart speakers of today.
What is an intelligent agent exactly?
Think about like C-3PO, the robot from Star Wars. C-3PO has agency. He's got the freedom to act independently to solve problems.
Sir, I am fluent in 6 million forms of communication.
But the brain that powers C-3PO doesn't have to go into his robot body. You could put it in a spacesuit or on a Fitbit.
Actually, I want that. The Fitbit, not the spacesuit.
Or you could simply make it part of Alexa.
I'm fluent in over 6 million forms of communication.
The important thing isn't the form that it takes, it's what it can do. And this agent that NASA developed, it's much smarter than Alexa. Alexa tends to give up when she can't understand. But this agent Agenta is developing learns, and it can troubleshoot problems and make predictions.
So it can learn about you, Joshua, based on your data, make predictions to support you, which today's smart speakers can't do. So it is kind of the brains behind the C-3PO, as you mentioned before.
Agenta wants this technology to talk to your doctor, too. This is really important because right now these are just fitness trackers. But when you tie them into healthcare, they become sensors that will help the whole system become more data-driven.
I see the connection to Amazon. Whatever they try to do in healthcare, you know it's going to involve data.
That's because they're a data management company, as much as anything else. Sure, they can make a few bucks selling Fitbits on Amazon, but there's a lot more money in reforming the healthcare system. And this is why tech companies are rushing to make sure their devices and the skills and the apps that run on them are legally able to handle medical records and schedule appointments and order prescriptions. Amazon has been checking off those boxes. It's now possible for hospitals and pharmacies to create HIPAA-compliant skills on Alexa. That means those skills adhere to federal privacy rules for medical information.
Right.
And smart speakers could push this even further because they're always on in our homes, and they could be programmed to listen for signs of health problems, like if somebody's having a heart attack or a drug overdose. I talked to Dr. Jacob Sunshine, who's an anesthesiologist. He also does research on smart speakers and phones as medical devices at the University of Washington Medical Center, where he's an assistant professor.
One really eye-opening moment for me was comparing a clinical monitor that's FDA approved that I use in the operating room to help guide me, you know, keep somebody alive if they're under general anesthesia.
And he compared that high-tech medical equipment to what's inside a smartphone and inside a smart speaker. And he says phones and smart speakers are far more powerful than the stuff they had in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They have more microphones, and they can even send out supersonic signals like a bat or a dolphin to measure the chest movements of even the tiniest infant.
That really, you know, brought home for me that these devices are pretty capable of doing things that involve, you know, monitoring health, even consequential monitoring when, you know, in a life or death situation or something.
Such as listening for the unique breathing pattern that some people make when they're having a heart attack. Sunshine has trained phones and smart speakers to listen for that. He trained them by feeding them 911 calls.
911 emergency. Yes, my husband just collapsed. He's not breathing well. What's the address? I need an ambulance.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Good job.
One,
keep going
two,
until help takes over, okay?
Okay, I'm getting a little freaked out here as well as a little overwhelmed. Can you just bring this together for me?
If you combine data from my fitness tracker with a health plan from my doctor and supplement that with data that a smart speaker could eventually collect about me passively, you know, like how I'm breathing or how I'm coughing, then the health insights I get could become even more useful. The challenge for Amazon has been to turn Alexa into an agent that can manage the data and even work with my doctor to help me understand the steps I need to take to sleep better at night. Kind of like NASA's virtual medical agents sift through all the noise and offer simple instructions to the astronaut on a spacewalk.
Well, it's no wonder Amazon chose to put that company with the NASA technology into its incubator.
It's no guarantee of the direction Amazon's going, but it wouldn't be the first time Amazon was inspired by space technology.
Computer, last message received and recorded from Captain Kirk.
In flight,
Run it through analyzer. Question. Is it or is it not the captain's voice?
Negative. I'll close the copy.
Jeff Bezos says that computer inspired Alexa.
Our vision was that in the long term, it would become the Star Trek computer. You could ask it anything and ask it to do things for you, ask it to find things for you, and that it would be easy to converse with in a very natural way.
Coming up next, do we want Alexa analyzing our health data and telling us what to do? Bree Causey is a personal trainer on Vancouver Island in Canada.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, good. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks.
And when fitness trackers first came out, she got obsessed. And she tracked her sleep, and she tracked her food, she tracked her workouts, she even tracked her relaxation.
I was trying to meditate because I heard meditating was good. And I know like the fitness, I think Fitbit had like a breathing app you could do as well, like a mindfulness app. So I was also using that.
Causey says tracking took over her life.
It was something like I felt compelled to do, and you'd get that quick hit of satisfaction when you would look at it or track something. And you just felt the constant need to do that, and you needed to keep doing that to feel satisfied. And I would notice, yeah, I would feel that sense of either loss of control or anxiety if I wasn't constantly checking. And I think that's why I was using the word obsession with it.
Just listening to her, I want to check my resting heart rate.
But for what? The data itself can be overwhelming.
You know, you have all this data, and then you have to spend the time to either decipher it, Google it. You could bring it to your doctor most of the time. They're like, I don't want this. Like, why are you bringing this to me?
Causey figured out that this thing that was supposed to help her get healthy had become unhealthy for her. So she made a decision to go cold turkey, and she turned off tracking. And now she counsels her clients that if they're anything like her, don't bother with trackers.
That's a big surprise to me because my tracker prods me to keep moving throughout the day, which makes me feel healthy.
Well, Causey says she's much happier now that she stopped. But she says if Amazon could actually build this thing that we're talking about, she would be all back in.
So if, you know, if there was kind of like a virtual health agent that could sort through it for you, like that would be amazing. I feel like that would be like the next step in healthcare.
But for that to happen, Amazon needs to overcome three obstacles. The device makers need to let all the things talk to each other. The AI has to find a way to bring it all together. And people have to be willing to give up their data.
Yeah, there has to be a real payoff, though. There needs to be proof that your actual health, not just your fitness, will get meaningfully better from all this monitoring.
Yeah, that is a good point. That doctor I talked to, Jacob Sunshine, says excessive monitoring carries risks too. More data isn't always good. Sometimes it can lead us to invasive treatments that do more harm than good.
This is a notorious problem in tech and health monitoring the worried well and having issues with excessive false positives, which are a really, really big deal. And so it's important to target your populations who are at risk for the actual event if you're going to be passively monitoring for it.
From that, I conclude that maybe I shouldn't monitor my heart unless I'm at risk for a heart attack.
Something he said stuck out to me. He called people the worried well.
Yeah.
Would he classify us with all of our health and fitness trackers as the worried well?
Maybe. I mean, we have so much data that we can end up doing more harm than good. Maybe we freak out over a spike in our data and it drives us into some fad diet. Even NASA has pulled back on how much it monitors astronauts when they're not on a spacewalk. Devon Griffin, the NASA scientist, told me that if you're wearing a Fitbit, you're collecting more data about yourself than an astronaut going about their daily business. That massive amount of data is going to become useful for someone, you know, like Google, who just bought Fitbit for $2.1 billion. We might have to start considering if that data is doing more for us or for the companies looking to capitalize on it.
But I wonder if the solution is actually to keep a doctor in the loop. The doctor's way more qualified to recognize if there's a problem with my heart rate than I am.
Yeah. Maybe the virtual agent can tell the doctor, I'm a little bit worried about this data I'm seeing. Like, can you look into it?
But that's not what the system looks like yet, right?
Yeah. We're still mostly getting the raw data. And in Bree Causey's case, all it was doing was making her more worried. But there are still glimmers of what the future could offer in her experience, because after she went cold turkey, she started monitoring again.
Why would she do that?
She wanted to get pregnant. And Fitbit helps women track their cycles by monitoring their heart rate. So she turned off the step counter, and she turned off the calorie counter and all that, and just focused on the limited information that she wanted.
Now, did it work?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, so it was actually my Fitbit that told me that that I was pregnant. So, because I knew what my resting heart rate had been, and I was tracking that, and it actually one day it just skyrocketed, and I was like, well, that's interesting. Like, why is that? And I took a pregnancy test, and it said I was pregnant.
It turns out a skyrocketing heart rate happens right after conception.
Which is fun, Joshua, but the Fitbit did not get her pregnant, which was the health outcome she was looking for. Thank goodness this is still done the usual way, but I'm talking about real health impacts from using the technology. We'd be giving up data, serious, intimate, important data about ourselves, in order to make this magic happen, so there have to be genuine positive health effects.
Yeah. And, you know, as these agents become the ones making judgments about our health and whether our behavior is healthy, we're going to want to keep a close eye on how much power we give them. Roshna Damija at Agenta says she thinks about that every day. So until I know that this intelligent software is actually making me healthier, I'm going to feel a lot better if there's still a doctor checking over its recommendations.
Next time on Primed, we'll tell you about PillPack, an Amazon company hoping to bring the pharmacy to your doorstep.
Primed is a production of KUOW Public Radio. It's hosted by me, Joshua McNichols.
And me, Carolyn Adolph. Our producer is Alec Cowan. Our editor is Carol Smith. Our executives are Jill Jackson and Brendan Sweeney.
Music this week by Raymond Scott and Alec Cowan. You can find links on our website.
This is a new season of Primed, and we want people to know about it. So we're asking you to help get the word out. Write a review or tell a friend about it. It would mean a lot to us.
Thanks for listening.